With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wait, are you recording this one or am I?
Yeah, boy.
Okay, let's just be utterly clear.
I want to hear
Adam say the words, yes, I'm recording.
Yeah. Boy! It is Thursday, which means it's time for the Front 3 Q&A podcast with me, Adam Boldwood. Lawrence McKenna is here.
Good evening.
Chris Henich is here from New York.
Hello, Adam.
He's got dodgy signal, in case you can't tell. He's going to be flitting in and out. And Dave is at Old Trafford. We'll be dialing him up in a few moments. Before we get into all that, though, is, of course, the Q&A podcast. We'll be taking your questions on Twitter. We should take a moment, though, to reflect on the tragedy earlier this week. Shappi Coinse, the team aboard the plane that crashed in Medellin in Colombia, 76 people were killed when the plane went down carrying the Brazilian football team in the early hours of Tuesday morning. Obviously, a very sad tragedy. So our thoughts go out to the family and friends of those affected. Just an awful, terrible
situation.
The whole
club there lost. A whole generation
just awful.
Club. And, you know, a lot of people are reflecting on the wider ramifications of this. And a lot of people making very sweet gestures towards it, showing that, you know, there's a lot of goodwill to a lot of other football fans and football teams out there in the game. And it's an awful thing that's happened on just a human level, even outside of football.
Yeah, truly.
But at the same time, there's been some really lovely gestures from all over the world. So it's nice to see people positively reflecting on such a tragic event as well.
Coming together to sort of commemorate in a way. There was minute silences today at many training grounds around the world of professional teams, Real Madrid and Barcelona, for example. There are also commemorations before the EFL Cup games tonight.
A lot of players touched by that as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Lucas Leiva and David De Gea as well. Who, you know, we don't know how close they are now with the players, but at the same time, having played with those guys, you know, it must be quite a jarring or an upsetting event for them. So,
Manchester United, of course, were in action taking on West Ham in the EFL Cup. Dave was there at Old Trafford. Let's dial him up now to get his thoughts on the result.
Well, this is David O'Brien reporting for the Front Three, and it was an exceptional performance for Manchester United in the second half. The first half was a little bit like recent games in the Premier League, where they created a lot of chances, but they didn't put the ball in the back of the net. But then in the second half, they really decided to... They just thought to themselves, you know, lads, let's score some goals. And it was a good performance from McTiernan, Antonio Valencia down that right-hand side. That was absolutely lethal. For a number of years now, United have lacked something on that right-hand side. You know, all the attacks focused down the left, especially that season. I think something like 39% of United's attacks were down that left-hand side. But this season, hopefully, McTiernan and Valencia can give United a great outlet. I think what it gives Antonio Valencia, it gives him confidence. Because the problem with Antonio Valencia is sometimes he gets to the final third and he looks back and he looks at the central midfielder and the momentum dies in the attack. With Henrik Mkhitaryan sort of playing as an inside right forward, there's an option for him inside that he can play off, that he can play 1-2s too, that he can, you know, the back heel for the third goal, the second goal, whichever one it was absolutely fantastic. Mkhitaryan running in the inside channel. And I think that's what it will give United with Mkhitaryan and Antonio Valencia.
You mentioned Mkhitaryan, obviously, as you say, two assists there. But perhaps the biggest moment of the night was Bastian Schweinsteiger playing his first game since March. What was the reception like in Old Trafford for Basti?
To be honest, right, this fellow, right, fair enough, he loves the club and whatever. He's built himself a brilliant media profile. But he hasn't done enough, hasn't done much for United. He's played there one season.
Where's that?
Probably louder than a lot of receptions for players that have given years and years for Manchester United.
Where's that affection coming from, though? Do you think, as you say, is it kind of a big PR move?
It's a media personality, isn't it? That's it. It's not performances on the pitch. It's just the media personality. And unfortunately, that's what's taken. Another thing that really pissed me off in the ground.
Hold on. Who? Bastian Schweinsteiger?
Yeah, Dave's saying he's cultivated like a nice guy personality. You know, maybe people feeling a little bit sorry for him. That's where all this affection's coming from. It's not actually for any on the pitch.
No on the pitch reason. So for me, well, you know, he's like any other United player. He's yet to show himself as a hero in a way.
Maybe part of it was that Mourinho never gave him the chance to prove himself to be a hero there.
I don't know. It was just a really weird reaction because it was the loudest cheer of the night. It was a weird one for me.
It's not a weird one. It's obviously that he stayed at the club when Mourinho put him in the reserves. He's battled.
I think it's a weird one. It's the weird sort of where football's going with kids playing on Snapchat and their phones and iPads out and all that type of thing. A game of football that you're supposed to be watching and concentrating on. It's going strange. Someone like Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Are you talking about Bastian Schweinsteiger?
Mourinho loves a sideshow, Dave.
Mourinho loves a sideshow.
What's Bastian Schweinsteiger done for Manchester United?
Sorry, mate. Do you not realise? So it's purely based on what you should only applaud someone based on what they've done for the club, not out of respect for the player, not out of respect for the fact that they've been through a hard time, not maybe.
What I'm saying is there's a loud roar. There's one of the loudest roars I've heard in season for a player that has played 23 times for Manchester United plus this sub appearance. Yes, he's won a World Cup. Yes, he's done this. Yes, he's done that. But I feel that the media's built him up to a level that he's.
But what he's saying, Lawrence, is that he hasn't. What he's saying is that he deserves respect for those achievements.
I also think it partly represents the way that the fans feel about the decision that Jose Mourinho or whoever it was at the club made to put him into the reserves.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because it's almost dissent from the fans. No?
I seriously think that's a huge part. That no disrespect to Dave, I think that's what he's missing. Is that really that kind of role for a player that's done nothing but been ostracised, I would say unfairly ostracised, is symptomatic of how the sport is feeling at the minute.
Or at least the body of the supporters, or maybe even just that it comes out at that point. And it shows that actually Mourinho's decisions don't actually stick with the majority of the fans.
Dave, on the pitch, what did Schweinsteiger contribute? And would you like to see him included in the team going forward? No.
Yeah, I think his time's done at Manchester United. I don't feel that he's got a role to play in Manchester United. Yeah, fair enough, he can sit on the bench and do what he wants, but he's got no big importance like Ander Herrera, Michael Carrick, Paul Pogba. I've even put him behind someone like Morgan Schneidlin. You know, that's it. He will go in January, whether this is to get him fit to sell him to a club. Maybe that's where the club is sort of positioning itself. But
yes, I mean, it's interesting.
To shrug of the shoulders.
He sounds like he drank the Kool-Aid.
I'd say it sounds like he spat out the Kool-Aid, Lawrence.
Well, no, because the Kool-Aid is Mourinho's Kool-Aid.
I'd say the Kool-Aid is Schweinsteiger's Kool-Aid in a way, no?
Yeah, but what...
There's two Kool-Aids, right? We've established that.
No, Schweinsteiger... Well, I suppose there are two Kool-Aids, but at the same time, Schweinsteiger deserves to play. I mean, the point is that he's a player in the... Because he's
he doesn't deserve to play. He's not good enough anymore. He's not fit enough. He can't play consistently.
I'm not saying... I would say that Mourinho's reaction was perhaps, seems from the outside a little bit over the top. It seems a bit harsh to relegate a player of Schweinsteiger's standing in the reserves, but to then say the opposite, he deserves to play. Yeah, we don't know.
Maybe he was causing trouble.
Who knows? I think it's... But I can see both sides of it, do you know what I mean?
Don't know that, though, do you? And you also...
But you're saying, he deserves to play. Since when? Why?
Well, I mean, if Mourinho is bringing him on the pitch, then he deserves to play.
No, he's probably, like Dave's saying, he's probably bringing him onto the pitch, put him in the shop window, get that fitness up for January.
At which point then he's earned his right to play and leave the club.
What about, Dave, because we could spend all night talking about the situation, talk to me about the performance of Wayne Rooney, because I saw a lot of reaction online saying that this is one of the better, or one of the best Wayne Rooney performances for years.
Yeah, I think he was one of the best for years. You know, motivated Wayne Rooney, motivated Rooney that has something to prove is a good Wayne Rooney, and that was the problem. Wayne Rooney stopped caring. But now you can see that he's got something to do on the pitch, and he has to get his position back in the first team, and I think that's a good thing for Rooney. And he was good. It was the flexibility of some of his runs, his movement off the ball, the interchange of the three forwards or three attacking midfielders behind Rich all night was fantastic. You know, Mkhitaryan coming onto the left, Anthony Martial going to the striker position, and so forth. It was very fluid, and Wayne Rooney is part of that. And Wayne Rooney you know, was instigating some of those counterattacks, winning the ball back, playing it forward, and then making a run forward. And it was, you know, it was a fresh United team, very, very fresh in behind Zlatan, especially in that second half. So they did a lot better. And again, down that right-hand side, they create down the right and they score on the left-hand side. That's what United need to do.
A good evening then with Ibra, with Martial among the goals. Like you say, a good performance from Wayne Rooney. What about the opponents, though? Did they offer up much against Manchester United? Was it a very different game from the weekend in the Premier League with the same opposition?
They were very, very poor. The only chance they really created was the chance that sort of came to them was the David De Gea handling issue. Obviously, David De Gea has had a bit of a tough week with Clever Santana. That's the fella's name. He used to play with Atletico. Obviously, passed away in the terrible accident in Medellin. So potentially his head wasn't in it. We can't criticise De Gea too much because he's been sober for the last season. But eventually, you know, you're going to go potentially back to the mean of your performances, which will be a few mistakes this season. And that was just one of them. But luckily, Manchester United pulled through together as a unit.
And finally, a word on your opponents in the semi-final, Hull City.
Well, we just got to make sure the Tigers don't roar and we'll be okay.
I think it's going to be a whole Southampton final myself. Anyway, Dave, we'll let you go. Go and enjoy your shandies and enjoy your night on the town.
Yeah. Sweet. Cheers, guys.
I don't know. Do you not feel like it sounded a little bit like...
I think that's an interesting... It is funny to get the biggest cheer of the season, bashing Schweinsteiger.
Obviously, we take different angles to try and make a sort of a conversation sometimes, but I still think very often on the podcast, it does sound like a few people at certain levels of YouTube-ness have... make a few excuses for the way that Mourinho has acted.
But I would usually wholeheartedly agree with you. I think there is a certain hypocrisy in backing Mourinho to the hilt when I think some of his behaviour should be criticised and we should look at what he is doing. But in this case, I can sort of see both sides of it. For you to say, yeah, Schweinsteiger deserves a place. Like, well, why did he deserve it? I'm not saying the treatment of him has been fair by Mourinho.
I think it's more that Schweinsteiger deserves respect and therefore
potentially that's a different
to get to be in the first team squad. I mean,
that's a different argument almost. He doesn't deserve to be relegated to reserves to be treated with from what the outside looks like a contempt almost for Mourinho.
I mean, the point is, you know, if it was something maybe that Schweinsteiger accepted or something. I mean, you know, the point is there have been other people who have come out in the press as well and said similar things against Mourinho. I think Mourinho at this point is losing because he's burned a lot of bridges with other people in the press and in the game. And those people are now, you know, those chickens are coming to roost maybe, which makes for an uncomfortable situation for Mourinho, because even if he's right, there are still people in the German national team and England, in the Premier League, all over, that say, well, I think Basti should be playing, or at least should be allowed to train with the first team. And actually, yeah, Mourinho is allowed to choose. But the fact is that he's burned so many bridges, and from the outside, it's perceived that he's treated other big players unfairly at previous clubs and at Manchester United, that people don't seem to be drinking the same Kool-Aid, like I say.
I like the Kool-Aid metaphor, because I think both of them are serving different sort of Kool-Aids, you know?
I would say that though Mourinho has a history of serving Kool-Aid, this is the first time maybe that Bastian Schweinsteiger has cooked up a batch.
Yes, and maybe some you should spit it out sometimes, you know, to take it that one step.
I think you always spit it out and give a balanced Kool-Aid. Yeah.
There you go, Lawrence says it: spit, never swallow. Of course, Manchester United, either way, going through to the semi-finals, they're taking on Hull. Of course, elsewhere tonight, Southampton progress to their first semi-finals of the EFL Cup for the first time since 1987. They beat Arsenal, an understrength Arsenal. Arsene Wenger made 10 changes to his side. An insipid display seems to be the common consensus among Arsenal fans. Once again, Arsene Wenger knocked out the League Cup. He hasn't won it in his 20-year reign in North London. He's not going to win it this year either. Southampton going through to the semi-finals to play Liverpool, Lawrence, who won 2-0 against Leeds United yesterday evening. And a great performance. And perhaps more importantly, the man taking all the headlines, Ben Woodburn, the teenager who now eclipses Michael Owen as Liverpool's youngest goal scorer.
Yeah, but quite about it. Was it 60 days or something? And good for him. He's number one. Klopp commented on him before the game and said, you know, he's finding it hard to keep him out of the first team in games like this. And it was, you know, that he thought he should be starting games, or he was making a case to be starting games very soon. Of course, he is only 17. It was a good goal, though, and obviously he's listened to Klopp. I think that's partly what Klopp wants, is someone who listens and executes. And that's maybe why Klopp is enjoying some of the young players, because they're easier to mould in that sense. But the wider point for Liverpool is actually that Gary Monk had identified, if you like, a few weak points within the Liverpool team, and then decided to play on them, which is that if a team sits back and then breaks, Liverpool also struggle against that. They find it hard to break them down in that sense. So Liverpool drew the team out, got in behind the back line. It was ultimately very good crossing from Arnold that got one, if not both, of the goals, and sort of attacking the left-hand side and down the right wing for Liverpool that got the goals. But it wasn't without, you know, them hitting the post, the inside of the post from a lovely strike, and also bossing Liverpool around just from having sort of weaker centre-backs, even if one of those was Lucas.
Also through to the semi-finals, as Dave said there, the Tigers, Hull City, Chris, beating Newcastle on penalties. What happened in this one? Rafa Benitez probably wondering how his side didn't win.
Newcastle lost, that's all I'm willing to say on this one, really. Disappointing, obviously.
Hashtag analysis.
Watching the game, they dominated possession, chances. I mean, I appreciate that some will cite the red card and say, well, of course they did. Actually, they had a more than lion's share for periods before that. This was, in a lot of ways, from a Newcastle perspective, this was a real test for them, because it was a Premier League side. The project stroke development with Rafa Benitez, but also just which players could maybe get up there and start. I think, honestly, the biggest takeaway and mentality is in that group. And look, there will be further tests now, because they've lost back-to-back games for the first time, I think, since September or something like that, or since the start of the season, rather. And now they've got to go to Forest on Friday night. I sound a bit Keegan-esque here. They've got to go to Forest on Friday night and try and get a result, which will not be easy, knowing that Brighton are only 2 points behind them. Everyone is expecting them to win the league, which, in a lot of ways, I think has been a bit harsh on them, because everyone was willing to laugh when they were losing, and then the second they started to win, they didn't really get any credit for the most part. It was, well, this is what we expect. The finishing was just the thing that let them down most. They had, I would say, a fair few really good chances, especially in extra time. Dwight Gayle, Matt Ritchie, they all had good opportunities. They just couldn't seem to put it away. And when they did get it on target, credit to Jakubovic, he was pretty impressive in goal. Honestly, watching this whole team, I will be so surprised if they stay up. Because there was periods watching that game where I honestly thought I'm watching like a top of the table championship clash here. That's what I felt like I was seeing. There's very little kind of inventiveness or spark about Hull. They're very easily ruffled. The press that Newcastle put on them just constantly unsettled them. And credit to them for going through. I think, look, they still have to score the penalties. They still have to find an equaliser. So they deserve real credit for that. I think any team worth their salt and with a bit of quality and composure in the final third will put three or four past them in the next round.
Right then, that is your EFL Cup roundup. Let's get in to the good stuff, the questions.
Good.
First up, Alex James at VillaFan28 writes in asking, do you agree with some Spurs fans calling for Poch to be sacked? Not any Spurs fans I know, Alex.
I don't know any Spurs fans that are saying that either.
Yeah, I'm sure there are some on Twitter tweeting hashtag Poch out, but I think that's obviously a very...
5-year-olds, maybe?
A very over-the-top reaction. Obviously, I was not here for Monday's podcast, but having watched the game against Chelsea, it was actually one of Spurs' better performance in the past couple of months, to be honest. They're very pleased with the way Spurs played in the first half. They seem to have rediscovered a bit of that intensity. Christian Eriksen, who's been very poor over the past few weeks, scored a fantastic goal and looked a lot more lively. Dele Alli as well, looked like he's getting back to his best form. So, you know, I think if people are calling for Poch out, I think they need to get a bit of perspective, essentially. And like he said after the game, he came out and said, look, it's one defeat in the league. I know through all competitions, the last couple of months have been poor and have been difficult in terms of the team's form. But if you look at that and say, well, there's one defeat in the league, it's a tough game away at Chelsea. Harry Kane's coming back into form now, who's so important for Spurs. Eric Lamella is on his way back. Toby Alderweireld is supposed to be in contention to play against Swansea at the weekend, who's obviously been a massive factor in Spurs' recent poor run. I think it's no coincidence that, you know, Spurs had the best defence in the league last year. In the past couple of games, we've been conceding, you know, two goals. The last three games in a row, we conceded two goals. So to have Toby back, I think, will make a massive difference to the side, essentially. So, you know, I'm not too worried. I was encouraged by the performance despite the defeat. So, Poch out, I think only if, as Lawrence says, you're a five-year-old, potentially. So yeah,
I mean, no disrespect to five-year-olds.
No, five-year-olds are valid football fans, and good luck to him.
Yeah,
basically. Here's a question.
Good luck to the five-year-olds
that are listening. Good luck in your lives. Here's one for you, Lawrence. Why do you think Klopp persists with Kevin Stewart? In my opinion, he should focus on other youth players. That comes in from the main man, Haz, HJD Cornish, long-time listener. Thanks for your question, Haz. Lawrence, what do you make of it?
Well, I think it's that Kevin has shown a lot of good touches and good interplay, and has shown that he's a forward and progressive midfielder in the shape that maybe Klopp wants him to be. I know that he made a couple of mistakes. I think it was more about his spatial awareness and basically being pressed in the right places the other night. Maybe something that he's not used to in that way. I think it was also quite a physical Leeds side. Kevin's actually had some pretty good performances for Liverpool when he started or has come on as a sub in the Cup or for Klopp in general, actually. So I think he persists with him because, you know, he's got the opportunity to. And Liverpool, he probably has the faith in him that he can do well in the midfield. It was still a strong midfield shape from Liverpool the other night. Liverpool still had experience in there. The reason I think he persists is because I think he sees something which is good, and you know, he was alongside Emre Can just the other night, so it's not terrible, is it?
It's not terrible, no. Chris, this one's for you. Francesco asks, what are your thoughts on Vincenzo Montella and what he is building at AC Milan? Now, you actually wrote an article for this, did you not, about this very subject for Yahoo.
I did. I just published it this morning.
I think his connection has gone, Lawrence.
Genuinely, yeah.
It's gone. Chris will hopefully be back later in the podcast. He's out in New York, you know. He's on the streets of Manhattan. He's going to Starbucks trying to get Wi-Fi. You know, he's struggling at the moment, but hopefully Chris can rejoin us soon. Because
in the old days, we used to just persist and let him just...
No longer.
Not after all those bad comments.
He just WhatsApped me saying, "Give me 1 second." So hopefully, you know, he'll be back.
Hopefully,
soon.
In a minute, he can rejoin us. But let's continue anyway.
Let's just carry on. Barca Everything said, "Did Mourinho deserve his ban for kicking the water bottle against West Ham? What did you make of this situation, Lawrence?" Because a lot of people pointed out, "Whoa, Jurgen Klopp, he swears at the linesman, and everyone thinks it's charming. Everyone thinks it's passion. Mourinho kicks
charming.
One bottle, one match ban." You know?
Which
Kool-Aid are you drinking now? You know?
We had this discussion the other night with Dave and how, you know, from the difference between maybe Klopp and Mourinho is that Mourinho has actually been aggressive towards other people in the game, having poked people in the eye. And I think essentially some people are a little bit bored of some of the things that Mourinho does. I mean, he's got a few people behind the scenes who maybe aren't so happy with him.
I wish Dave was here to answer the question because I feel like I am quite anti-Mourinho. I feel like you're quite anti-Mourinho. Not like
anti-Mourinho. It's that
that makes us sound biased, but I mean, I have a negative opinion of him.
The fact is, actually, I want to see Mourinho do well. I actually really like him as a manager, as a manager. I used to love it. Like I used to to some extent be obsessed with him as a manager, a football manager. I used to read books about him. You know, find whatever articles I could about him. I wanted to make documentaries about the guy. And
do you know what I think is? And I said this to you the other day. I think Mourinho is doubting himself. I don't think he's ever been in a situation before where he's ever had to doubt his methods truly or question what he's doing. The results have always come, be it at Real Madrid, where he obviously had that difficult time, and the dressing room proved to be a lot to handle in terms of the egos there, in terms of the personalities and the power that certain players held. But, you know, this season, for example, is not a situation that Mourinho is used to. And of course, he wasn't used to the situation last season at Chelsea. Being in the chase in pack or falling behind, he's always used to being at the top, you know, creating that siege mentality and leading from the front, letting everyone else chase. To have fallen behind so quickly, it's difficult to build a siege mentality when you're not performing, when you're not winning games. To get the players to buy into your methods, to buy into your psychology, I think is difficult. So I think he almost doesn't believe in himself as well as the players not believing in himself. Do you know what I mean?
I also think that other things have changed around him, and he is now sort of in a situation where he's playing catch up to some extent to the way that other, you know, other managers have moved as well. And also, I think he went in at United and wasn't expecting some of these situations that are now there. I think maybe he thought it would be a little bit easier. I think things would have gone Mourinho's way. I think he also expected the press to treat him maybe in a different way. And a lot of people have briefed or began to sort of speak out against his, him and his ways in that sense. I think people also had a bit of time to reflect on how Mourinho has treated them. And maybe also some people have sort of taken some of Mourinho's own qualities and began to incorporate them into their game. And
superseded
and into their own mentality and into their own psychology. And now Mourinho is finding that people are doing a Mourinho on him, and he doesn't quite know how to deal with that, because before he was quite a unique character.
It's true. It's very true. Chris, you back?
Yes, I should be. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, you sound beautiful. I mean, that is a smooth-ish connection. Chris, we were just speaking to you before about AC Milan.
Give me 1 second. I should be okay in about 1 second. I'm about to get into higher ground, I think.
Higher ground? Where are you?
Actually, give me 1 second to...
First of all, it's genuinely incredible that in the first place we can even talk to each other from halfway around the world.
Yeah, let's appreciate that, you know.
Yeah, Chris was right.
Okay, there we go.
Talk about that article and talk about AC Milan.
Yeah, so I think Montella deserves a lot of credit, of course, because he's obviously in the senior team, and he's implemented a style that's very appealing on the eye and just is not the easiest to put in place. I think what you have to do, though, and this is what the article kind of covered, is look at the Milan situation in its entirety. So around 2013, they look at the youth academy and decide that it's not producing in the way that it should be. And they toured a lot of famed academies, Barcelona, Real Madrid, etc., and devised their own strategy for building players. And it was quite a holistic strategy, mainly. And it wanted to focus on every avenue. But the aim was not necessarily for the teams to win, but for the teams to produce players. Which I think is something that maybe gets lost in youth football from time to time. That's where the guys like Locatelli come through, Donnarumma come through. Granted, some of them are just natural ability, that goes without saying. But the infrastructure and the pathways for them to get to the first team has been key. They've now got the youngest squad in Serie A, which is a pretty impressive feat when you consider last year they were 10th. And just in general, they've looked really good.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Next question. Well, it's less of a question. It's more of a statement. Maybe a threat? I'm not quite sure. It comes from at Tripat171, who just says, stop your anti-Messi agenda. Do we have an anti-Messi agenda, Lawrence?
Maybe he was talking to Ronaldo.
I am of the opinion that Messi is the greatest player of all time, so therefore...
Well, it doesn't mean that you can't be anti him.
Well, I did actually ask him, what does he mean by that, anti-Messi? I thought, you know, we're not anti-Messi. He said, for one, there was no mention of Messi and Suarez guiding Barcelona to the double during the League and Cup wrap-up. Also, you tried to justify Messi not being nominated for the UEFA Ballon d'Or, top three. Plus, there was no mention of Barcelona-Sevilla game 2 weeks ago. The Madrid derby got more coverage. I know the derby was bigger, but Barcelona-Sevilla was also big in the context of the league. Now, in our defence, I think we weren't trying to justify why Messi isn't in the top three. We were explaining why he may not be in the final three nominees because of the way the Ballon d'Or is voted for. And
yeah, I mean, there's also a difference. Yeah, there's a difference between explaining and excusing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He said we justify it, as if we were saying Messi doesn't deserve to be there for X, Y, Z. I don't believe we actually said that at the time. And also, the Madrid derby was, of course, our game of the weekend. We made a big thing of it because we wanted to focus on that game that weekend.
Well, because you're your anti-Messi agenda, clearly.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure Monday's podcast game of the weekend will be El Clasico. There'll be plenty of Barcelona coverage then.
Well, only if they win, Adam. I mean, if they lose, then we're happy to cover that.
All I can say, TripAt171, is I can apologise if we have come across as anti-Messi, but that's not our intention, you know? We all have opinions, but I think you're mistaken potentially in your anti-Barcelona, anti-Messi accusations. Perhaps.
We're big lovers of Barcelona. We are.
But who doesn't love them, you know?
Who doesn't love a Catalonian?
I mean, we've been accused of being anti-Real Madrid in the past as well. So, I mean, what are you going to do, eh?
If you are giving one person more light, some people believe you're throwing shade.
I would never throw shade. Here's a good question from Lue Morad. He says, what do you think of having an all-star game for leagues at the end of the season, maybe to influence the coefficient for the UCL and UEL?
Imagine that if it actually had some influence on the coefficient. Obviously, that won't happen. But who?
I like the idea. He says, what do you think of it? Now, let me just say, I like it because... for me personally, I felt the Champions League is starting to get a little bit stale. We're seeing the same teams getting through to the later stages. We're seeing the same sort of matchups, not just in the knockout stages, but also the group stages. I like the idea of sounding a little bit fresh. All-star teams from each league taking each other on. Messi alongside Ronaldo. That's something people would want to see. You know, Sanchez alongside Harry Kane, for example. Not that he would necessarily get in the team, but you catch my drift. You know, that could be a very exciting... I would not necessarily suggest it has that influence in terms of the coefficients. Maybe it's kind of a charity sort of exhibition style match. I think that could be quite fun. I'm not quite sure about making it a competitive thing.
I mean, it would be fun if it was a competitive thing, and it would also mean we took it more seriously. And
that's true.
I mean, would Messi and Ronaldo be
allowed to play in an exhibition match?
I also think it would somewhat step on the toes of international football because people would be like, oh, well, it represents the league, it represents what those countries have produced, and the pull. You know, what if someone did a transfer, say, midway through the season? Who would they play for? You know, what if, say, Suarez moved from Liverpool to Barcelona, but midway through the summer? You know,
it's different. It's a logistical nightmare.
Either that, or you put it during the winter break when all the clubs are now currently going to go away and play their exhibition games for millions of pounds anyway. So
I think it'd be pretty exciting. I'm just not sure you'd be able to
get in from the Premier League. I think we need Dave and Chris around properly, not on ship connections. But
why don't we do that on?
We could do that on a YouTube video, Adam.
We could. Yeah, let's do it on a YouTube video. I mean, that is
it's
clickbait central. I love it. Let's do it on a YouTube video. We can sort of discuss, we can set out each of our teams and discuss who would probably win in this hypothetical scenario. Maybe even make them on Football Manager or something and compete against each other. I mean, there's so many possibilities. It's just running through my head right now.
Modern day content creators can come up with full formats within a minute.
Within minutes. Within mere seconds.
You are hearing the whirring of a modern day YouTube brain.
You can hear the cogs turning, right?
The cogs turning. At Boltwood's tiny Intel i4. Want to say
there's at least 16 gig of memory in this old brain.
You're right, but it's only a 2G3 GPU.
Right, we've lost the non-Mac crowd. Let's bring it back. Gary Goals, the main man, at Dayson 1996. How do you rate Zidane's managerial career?
I think it went up tonight.
It went up tonight. Was it a 6-1 win, I believe?
6-1, mate. And not only that, but I mean, every manager, we all know, every good manager can get the best from his own son. And tonight, Enzo Zidane scored.
Yes, a lovely goal. It got me thinking how many fathers have managed their own sons. Of course, Bob Bradley, a friend of the show, I think it's fair to say now. Maybe BFF of the show. Of course, managed Michael Bradley. Now we've got Zidane managing. Yeah, that's frowned upon pretty much everywhere.
Oh, that's Freudian.
Managing Enzo. I've got to keep that in as well, haven't I? I can't end that. Any other fathers managing their Steve sons Brooks. You can think of?
Alex and Steve Brooks.
Alex
and Steve. Of course, Nigel Pearson.
Infamously.
We all know that one ended well.
Infamously, I think it's fair to say. Chris, you got any...
Sir Alex had Darren Ferguson on his books for a brief time.
Did he? He was actually on the book. You've got Zlatko and Nico Kranjčar. Google reliably informs me. Harry and Jamie Redknapp, of course.
Of course. Love that one.
Stephen Axbruce, as you say. Johan and Jordi Cruyff.
Of course.
Perhaps the most famous. Brian and Nigel Clough. You know?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Cesar Maldini and Paolo potentially... Maldini, yes.
Yeah.
There you have it, guys.
So Maldini did it at the under-21 level or the under-23 level?
Not sure.
I'm not sure that that's a management combination. I just think that it must be something to do, because he's never managed the club, has he, Maldini?
I feel like we've slightly got away from the actual question, talking about marrying sons and all this sort of stuff. But in terms of Zidane's managerial career, Chris, I mean, how do you rate it? Because I think he's now, what unbeaten run is he on? Is it something like, he's come up to the record, I think, which is held by Ancelotti, it's something like 30, 31 games. He must be approaching that now.
I think he's done very well. I think the Champions League win was...
I want to say good.
Huge for him.
Huge, good.
I mean, this could be fun. We can just fill in the gaps.
Don't get the monkey off.
If you guys just paste all the words together, I think you still get the answer. Monkey, good. Champions League, positive.
The monkey off is what, Chris? I'm dying to know. Next question. Here's a good question from Eddie MUFC. What is the best food to eat when watching football? I feel like we've had this question a number of times.
I think we've spoken about this a lot.
My answer, I think, is always nachos. I mean, that's a great shout.
I was going to say nachos. Pizza's also a good one. Popcorn's a good one. M&M's are a good one. Healthy
food. I feel like popcorn and M&M's, they're not like food. They're like sweets, they're confectionery, you know. He's talking like food, do you know what I mean?
Meals.
Yeah. Nachos, fully topped, though. I'm not talking like, a little bit of like runny cheese. I'm talking chili on there, jalapenos, sour cream, fresh guacamole. Like, you've got to go all out.
Salsa.
Don't. Do it.
Some wet salsa. Good point. Yeah, no, nachos is a great answer.
Nacho. Burgers. Nacho Libre.
Chicken wings. Chicken wings are always good.
Yeah, everyone loves it. Everyone loves chicken wings.
Shishawang. Yeah. Let us know. What do you guys eat when you watch football? Pho is good. Just saying.
Pho?
Just a good, yeah, you know, like PHO.
Is that right?
Just good food.
Yeah, nice. Here's a question from Kyle, and I believe this one might have been answered in potentially a vlog going up this week on the channel. But anyway, he says, will Liverpool struggle without Coutinho?
Answering on my vlog, mate. That one goes up. Ooh, maybe... Probably Friday. But the up and down of it is... Certainly will be a different team without Coutinho. But it doesn't mean that Liverpool don't have other options. And so far, that other option has been in the form of Divock Origi. And tonight, I was actually challenged on Twitter about the negativity. But apparently of my negativity towards Liverpool. How very often, let me find this for you, because it was a good little answer thread, actually. It addressed that I didn't really mention Sturridge, or it didn't seem I was aware of Sturridge's injury, which I was, but what I'm more trying to say is that I think the more that Sturridge gets injured, the more that maybe he proves he's not in it for Klopp system. It's nothing to do with being dedicated or anything. I just think it's that Klopp needs fit players in order to enact a system.
This was a guy called 50 Shades of Hendo, long time listener. So yeah. Thank you for your comment.
Albin the Albino.
Whenever Lozcast talks about Liverpool, I find myself disagreeing with him.
And I said to him, why? And he said, maybe I'm just more of an optimist. I do like to think of myself as an optimist. But I thought against Southampton, we created more than enough good chances whilst they barely created any. People in general underestimate our defence. It's been largely untroubled last few Premier League games, bar against Palace. I always find it difficult when people say they've been largely untroubled apart from. Although slightly disagree with your assessment of the Sturridge's situation, etc., etc. The fact that you seemingly weren't aware of his injury this weekend doesn't exactly help. It just seemed odd. But again, maybe I'm more of an optimist. I mean, the Sturridge situation is an interesting one. I think Liverpool still have options up front. They've shown that a 17-year-old can come in and do good things. It's not that I don't have sympathy for Sturridge or that I don't know about his situation. It's just that I do think that there is an air of inevitability about him leaving the club. Do I think Coutinho will leave? Possibly in the end.
Well, I've got a related question, Lawrence. This is perfect. At Edgar tweets to you, and Edgar, he did tweet to us. He said, if/when Coutinho leaves Liverpool, who would you get to replace him? My shout is Çalhanoğlu from Bayern.
Çalhanoğlu's not a bad one. I mean, Pulisic would also be a great one, but apparently he's not on his way. I would also maybe like to see someone from internally. I mean, it would be lovely to see someone else step up. Divock Origi has got question marks over him, maybe, because some people feel he's a little bit hot and cold. And maybe he's a bit of a pace merchant, but maybe that's not true because he has great footwork with him. Mm. There are times where he looks frustrated, though. Who would I get to? Çalhanoğlu is a lovely shout. There's also just people running from different angles in midfield. So maybe if Coutinho did leave, it would be sad because I also think Liverpool would maybe lose Firmino then, or maybe lose the best of Firmino in that sense. But I think if he did leave, it would be very sad. I think a lot of Liverpool fans would be very upset because they still think that they've done a lot to raise his profile, etc. And maybe for that reason, he should stick around for a little longer.
Pace merchant, yeah?
He's a merchant of pace.
What are you a merchant of?
Don't
say banter.
No, I don't want to be a banter merchant. I don't want to be a conversation merchant. I want to be a positivity merchant.
Ooh. I mean, maybe 50 Shades of Endo. He's got to you. I'll just say that.
I like to answer people's good questions.
You're like Bob Bradley, you are.
I'll bloody email him later.
Edwin Marr tweets in saying, predictions for the weekend's big matches. Two huge clashes this weekend, of course. Number one El Clasico. Let's start there, Lawrence. What do you make of this one? Because it's a huge game, not only in terms of obviously being such a historic rival, the biggest game in the world, but if Real Madrid win this one, people are saying Barcelona's title hopes are dead. I think there'll be something like 9 points adrift of Real Madrid if Madrid do indeed win this one.
Yeah, I don't think that means it's over. We've seen bigger gaps close, etc.
In La Liga, though?
I can't remember the bigger
draws
points game,
a lot in that league, you know?
Yeah, I mean, 9 points is a big one to make up, especially against a side that are doing so well at the moment in the league. But they're clearly shown not to be untrippable, uppable, because the Champions League has shown that one. So I wouldn't put it beyond them. And Barcelona are a team who maybe are currently trying to solve their problems, or their problems that they look to have been found out on. Will they close it? I think the El Clasico is one of those games which will probably dictate that, because like you say, it puts a good gap between the two. But I still think there's narrative in this season, and for that reason I think that it's still open.
Chris, what do you think the narrative of this game is going to be?
I can't speak massively to that. Honestly, I think it'll finish 2-2. I think the two teams are
narrative
a little bit closer than we might think. And given the connection of one, I don't think anything complicated would be worth attempting.
Of course, the other game, Man City-Chelsea. We were speaking ahead of the Spurs game, saying this could be a real test for Chelsea these two games. I think obviously Spurs scoring against Chelsea showed that they're not invincible. Do you expect City to potentially exploit them more effectively than Spurs did, Lawrence?
Yeah, possibly so. I think both sides will probably end up exploiting the other one's weaknesses. It's been a while since Chelsea have conceded a meaningful number of goals, that being goals. So I'll be excited to see what City do against them. But realistically also, this is a great chance for Conte to sort of galvanise the players and the Chelsea fans further, because City were the title favourites.
It is a big game for City. I think they managed to...
I mean, this is essentially two of the top two sort of deciding a bigger points gap, like you say.
I think it's almost more of a test for City, because obviously their win against Burnley the weekend meant that was their first back-to-back victories since September, of course, when everything was looking very positive at the start of the season. Obviously, the biggest game they played, or potentially you could argue the toughest opposition, was Spurs. They were beaten pretty convincingly 2-0 at White Hart Lane. So this game is a real test for Guardiola in terms of the opposition, in terms of the structure of the league, in terms of how we're going to view his team going forward and their title challenge. So I'm excited for this one. I am very excited for this one. I think, to make a bold and brash score prediction, Chelsea-Man City, based on what I saw of Chelsea last week, I'm going to say 1-1.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think,
I'm going to say 2-1 Chelsea.
Wow, okay. I'm just thinking, Man City at home, Guardiola being the consummate tactician, he might find a way to negate this system that Conte's got going on. I mean,
possibly so, but then this side has sat back, and I will be interested to see how they use their front line, whether they run at the weaknesses of Man City and basically try and catch them off their feet. But then, of Chelsea. And if I just wonder if Guardiola is going to focus on one or two of those guys at the back, maybe just one, and just keep trying to exploit the gaps between those defenders, because it is possible to exploit those, especially with players like Sterling, etc. But the problem is that they're just, I mean, Moses and Alonso sitting there just makes it so much harder to attack from any angle that maybe Man City would want to attack from.
Fingers crossed, ladies and gentlemen, that Chris's connection is stable, because this one is all about him. Legend.
It's
friend of the show, John Shin, long-time listener, long-time friend, says, Chris, what are your thoughts on NASL and the Cosmos?
It's disappointing. Now that I've got that statement out, I can attempt something a bit more complicated, which is to say that essentially it seems like the more that's changed, the more it's stayed the same. The ownership group realistically has repeated a lot of the mistakes of the previous iteration in the 70s and 80s, which is they've overspent and just assumed that the money coming in would just increase, that attendances might rise and that people would keep wanting to see a team that didn't have huge stars. The Raul Senna-like players who, yeah, I think appeal to tourists and definitely had a core fan base but didn't have a huge one. That just dwindled ultimately. They don't have their own stadium, which granted is something that hampers NYCFC, but at least they have Villa and Pirlo and Lampard and players that people realistically want to see, with all due respect to the NASL guys. A lot of them are Americans who aren't really selling many tickets. I think it's disappointing that a historic team like that is in that position. Of course, it's not what anyone wants to see, whether you like the sport in this country or not. Unfortunately, I think they've pushed themselves into that corner, though.
That was amazing. I'm just amazed by the connection. Fantastic. Carlos Zaldivar, always writing in the good questions, always writing them in. He said, individual and or collective team of the year, mine is this. He's gone for Oblak, PK, Pepe, Godin, Benucci, Modric, Iniesta, Kante, Ronaldo, Messi and Suarez. That's a pretty decent team, Carlos. I think we'll do our team of the year, as we did last year, to cap 2016, one of our final podcasts, we'll sort of talk about our team of the year and sort of talk for our selections and who merits to be in each position. We'll go in a little more in depth on that one. But thank you very much for your question. Thank you very much for sending in your team. Chris, this one's coming back at you again. Henrik writes in saying, how good is Odegaard right now? He will be one hell of a player. Obviously, Martin Odegaard at Real Madrid, a huge fanfare. Was it in 2014 he signed for Los Blancos?
Yeah.
At the age of 15 years old?
January? I think it was January of 2015.
And he sort of started to make, well, he made a rare appearance, I think it's fair to say, in the Copa del Rey clash this evening, the 6-1 win over Leonessa. I mean, Chris, what do you make of Odegaard? Do you think he's still got that potential to fulfil the talent that everyone was hyping him up for all those years ago, 2 years ago?
I think of course he does. He is still exceptionally young. He's, you know, we talked about Donnarumma and Locatelli there before. He's in that same.
Anyway, there we go. Lovely, beautiful, fantastic.
We'll probably answer that question again next week. Chris has got a slightly dodgy connection out in New York. I can only apologise, but, you know, at least he's here. Do you know what I mean? He's putting in the effort. He's putting in the time to be here for you guys. Yes, you're only getting one out of every 10 words, but, I mean, it's the thought that counts, guys. Let's finish on a lovely question from Ray Burkew. He said, I finally remembered my question. He must have forgot it, I assume. He said, how has the front three affected your lives? He suggests maybe you've gotten more publicity, etc, etc.
Definitely not. If anything, I've had less.
How has it? How has the front three affected your life, Lawrence?
It's meant that I've got to spend a lot more time with people that I like. Mm. It's good. You know what I really appreciate was that before I'd sort of had football ideas and sort of want to make videos and. There were some very, you know, some very good people around me that maybe weren't as well equipped, but were very well informed about football. And for a long time, made a lot of effort and was sort of working in a direction to get to this point. I always wanted to kind of do my own channel as well. And this has been a good place to sort of test out some of our ideas. I find sometimes some things I say on the front three, I will sort of, you know, expand out into the wider world. So it's, yeah, it's been nice. You know, and it's also just been good to spend time with you guys.
Nice.
Sometimes also it's been beautiful, lovely, amazing.
Better.
Sometimes some people have sort of said, oh, I saw this on the front three. It would be good if we could do that on our channel or something like that. And I quite enjoyed that because it means that I think there are some people who I really respect in the industry that have seen it and say, oh, you know, I saw this, thought it was good. So I like that other people watch that. What about you, Boltwood? Brought us closer.
Yeah, you know, I think it's affected
my working from close.
You know, I've got three good friends now, as opposed to three casual acquaintances, as opposed to three people I occasionally work with. You know, I think we've all become good friends.
Relatively, we didn't know each other as well as we thought we did when we first started, did we? Yeah.
You know, when I think I suggested to you, I was like, you know, we should have a podcast because I thought. I always enjoyed talking to you about football. I enjoyed talking to Dave about football, and I thought it's a waste to lose that when we sort of stopped making content for Football Daily. I thought, you know what, it would be great to still have those chats because, you know, I love talking about football. I think, you know, yourself and Dave are you're two of the most intelligent people I've ever met in your own ways, you know, in very different ways. Chris as well, I would definitely add in there. But it's like a different, each of you's got your own sort of intelligence, if you know what I mean. So coming together, I think it's really interesting to hear all of you speak about football. I like to think that, you know, I know what people want to hear about, and you know I've got my own opinions and enjoy chucking them in, but it's more for me about I really enjoy the discussions we have on the podcast. And as I say, you know, I think we've become good friends from doing a podcast, whereas before didn't really know you guys very well at all.
Not as well, anyway. Yeah.
Well, you'd say casual acquaintances. We've upgraded from acquaintances.
Obviously, we met every Monday, didn't we? And we'd sort of do the Football Daily Weekly and
through that. Yeah, it was quite a professional, professional-ish vibe, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely not on my part.
But I wouldn't say, you know, it hasn't affected my life in terms of publicity or anything like that. I think, you know,
I mean, you do have 3,000 followers almost, Adam, on
4,000.
I mean on the Front Three account, but
Yeah. But I think it's more about, you know, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think we all enjoy doing this podcast. I think it allows us to express our thoughts and our feelings on the game. It allows us to do something creative around what we enjoy doing.
Also, it's meant that I've become close with Chris. The reason I didn't say Chris was because I was already very close with Chris. Dear friend to me in that sense, and I was always looking for good projects. I'm really glad actually that Kristen has sort of. He was always in the mind from the beginning, but we called it Front Three. It's also been good because it's meant that I've been close with other people. There have been lovely people who have reached out, like Soliman, who has done some Bundesliga videos for us, Nick Morales, who's done some fantastic analysis that hasn't come out on the channel yet, but is still going to come out, and people like Napoon, and obviously also the Bob Bradley interview that went out this week, and also fantastic. Just talking to people on Twitter in general, coming into contact with people that maybe you or Dave had contact with, that then we all pooled those people together on the Front Three.
Yeah,
and maybe they, you know, they, some of my people who follow me maybe wouldn't have never come into contact with Dave, and vice versa.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like you say, it's great to, you know, we don't get hundreds of millions of hits or anything like that, but I think it's almost. I'm really proud that we've got quite a small but quite
loving affection.
Yeah, a loving kind of community around it. You know, we have so many great people sending questions every single week. People like John Shin, people like Carlos, who sort of send in these great questions. And I think, you know, it's gratifying and, you know, it's kind of humbling in a way that people enjoy hearing us speak about football.
It's humbling.
But that they want to be part of the conversation as well, that they are part of the conversation, I think it's quite a... it's a very nice thing that we've built, and long may it continue. Yes.
Although it's also worrying that this is the longest answer we've given on the whole podcast. So yeah.
No, not necessarily, you know. What's worrying about that? We're talking about what we enjoy about doing on the Front Three, you know.
About ourselves.
Yeah. Because we're self-obsessed and narcissists.
In fairness, my Martin Odegaard answer was much longer, but it probably didn't come through.
Very good point, yeah. Yeah, Christian's been speaking for 10 minutes and you've finished him.
Potentially got a pocket of decent airspace. I think what I would say about him is everyone who's expecting stuff from him at this age is ignoring what he himself said, which is he's not going to be the best player he could be until he's 26. He's still in the Locatelli, Donnarumma age bracket. So time is massively on his side. For all the people that think that Real Madrid's not a good place for him to develop, he could easily develop elsewhere. I think there's a naive kind of expectation that's also really founded on a lack of patience.
Chris, how has the Front Three affected your life? You sort of tailed off on your answer.
I'm going to the
bridge. Yeah, you tailed off on your Odegaard answer, so we moved on. But we do appreciate you answering it because, you know, we love to hear your thoughts. But we were answering a question about how the Front Three has affected our lives. I mean, what do you reckon?
Honestly, I think in a lot of ways I would echo the sentiments a little bit and say that for me personally, it brought me definitely, I think, closer to yourself and Dave in the sense of you were people that I knew through Lawrence, but not very...
Yeah, acquaintances.
Not deeply or anything like that, not past the professional level. And I think, honestly, it also gave me a platform to be slightly more expressive and able to unpack ideas into a much bigger, broader space, which is something I think I've been trying to do for a while without always having the canvas to do that.
It's a good testing ground, you know what I mean? It's good.
It is good.
It's and you know what? It's always fun to go over to the Front Three account and see what is on there.
It is indeed. But if you enjoy the podcast, guys, if you share our sentiments, then do leave us a review on iTunes. You can rate the podcast out of 5 and write a little review about why you enjoy the Front Three. It helps us in the iTunes rankings, helps more listeners find us. So we'd appreciate that very much.
Very much.
Very much. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the Q&A. Apologies for the slightly patchy signal, but like I say, you know, it's the thought that counts in many ways.
Yeah. Should we mention the Bob Bradley interview at this point? Just to push people towards...
Yeah, let's. If you haven't already, what's wrong with you? if you haven't listened to our exclusive Bob Bradley interview, then go and do it now. Scott Nichols, the journalist, he approached you, Lawrence. I mean, we told the whole story on the exclusive itself. You were speaking about it on Monday's podcast. But it is, you know, I literally cannot stress enough how interesting it is. I think it's almost unprecedented for a Premier League manager to speak at that length and to give that level of detail and insight into his process and into his methods. I think it's really interesting to hear from Bob Bradley. And I, for one, have got you know, a newfound respect for him. I think he comes across as a very intelligent man, a very well-considered man. And, you know, I hope Swansea do stay out this season so that we can continue to see Bob in the Premier League.
Partly did make me want Swansea to stay up. Yeah,
definitely. But, you know, I think fair play to him for doing that, I think, to sort of reach out to someone like Scott and sort of want to have that conversation and have that dialogue with him. And I think there's a lot to respect about that in an age where, you know, you only hear managers speak in small sound bites and players speak in small sound bites, where you don't really get to a level of understanding how their process works. I think it is a very interesting podcast. So again, a massive thank you to Scott and, of course, Nipunu, who hooked us up, right?
Lovely guy, Nipun, great guy. The ULF podcast, really good. Excellent. If you're a United or a Liverpool fan, go and listen to it.
What's the deal with the Twitter bants that he's your nemesis? What's that about?
We actually...
Hearty banter.
He's just a dick.
yeah, I feel like you flip-flopped slightly. I'm not quite sure.
It's the way that I feel about him ultimately. He's just a massive, he's a massive cock.
Lovely guy. Oh, right, okay, fair enough. Yeah. Nipun, I love you. Don't worry about it.
Can't stress it much, enough how much I hate that guy.
But guys, thank you so much for listening to The Front Three. Just moving on swiftly. We will see you next Monday. For our weekend review, for our European game of the weekend, and our player of the week, all that good stuff. Until then, though, Lawrence, until Monday, where can the hole find you?
Go to our YouTube, the YouTube of The Front Three. Type in The Front Three on YouTube.
Chris, out in New York, thank you for joining us and battling through your dodgy, dodgy signal. Where can the good people, where can the hole find you before Monday? I mean, that's perfect.
Oh man, Keir Hennage, HENEAGE. Thanks a lot. No.
Your accent's thicker out in New York, Chris. Yeah. Weird that. Chris, thank you so much. At K Hennage on Twitter. Do go and follow him there. Guys, you can follow me at Adam Boltwood on Twitter. Make sure you follow at The Front Three with the number, not the word as well. Get your questions in there throughout the week for next week's Q&A pod.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Until Monday, have a great week and enjoy the weekend's football.